Hello and welcome to Horrible Friends Condensed Spoop, a smaller, shorter version of our normal show where we talk about horror movies, review horror movies, and anything related to the horror genre. I'm Chris, and today I'm joined by Jarvis and Mike John. How's it going, boys?
My man. What's up, dude?
Hey, hey.
Right, so today I want to talk about, you know, what scared the shit out of you as a child?
Is what you're asking us, what got us to this lowly state of horror obsession? Is that more or less the question?
More or less the question, yeah. Like, what pretty much made you shit your pants as a child, but also enjoy it at the same time?
Pretty much everything. I was a pissy pants scaredy boy as a kid.
Oh, same here.
I couldn't get enough, man. You know, it's funny because, like, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, we literally psychoanalyze each other at least once a week during this podcast. And it always kind of comes down to, like, the boilerplate question being, why are we like this? Why are we so fucking wrong? And the conversation really did kind of raise a lot of provocative thoughts, being like, you know, how did horror become so deeply ingrained? And I think looking back, there were a lot of instances where, you know, horror was kind of all around us in a lot of shapes and sizes. But definitely in early memories of media, I remember a lot of like horror-centric themes.
I remember, you know, as a kid, I was like too scared to watch a lot of that stuff as a kid. But like at the time Scream was coming out, I Know You Did It Last Summer was coming out. A lot of those big staple for a horror franchises, Chucky, mm-hmm. like all those movies. And I didn't watch them, but I was always fascinated by how kids talked about it in the playground, because when you're a kid and you see that stuff, it's like mythic level. It's not just a movie. It's like a folktale being told to you.
And wow, kids, yeah.
Kids talk about that stuff like Freddy or Pennywise are out there somewhere. And I always took in the storytelling aspect and how that impacts people. And I was always fascinated by the afterwards, like the pillow talk, if you will, of horror.
That's really interesting kind of way to frame it, because I also remember it being kind of, I don't know, it seemed almost like a flex. Like if your parents, you know, weren't like so on your back that they let you have like little snippets of horror. Like I had friends that were like, yeah, my mom lets me watch Chucky. Like it's no big deal. I was absolutely not allowed. Right. But looking back, it's kind of funny because like horror centric themes were everywhere. Nickelodeon was in the cartoons. It was in it was storytelling back in the day. Like scary was in when we were growing up. So you almost didn't have to be watching actual slashers and, you know, kind of like the 90s. The 90s horror classics, you know.
The 90s was really like, I feel like they shoved it down our throats in a lot of ways. I you're right that it was everywhere. I never seen another decade that really emphasized spooky shit year round like the 90s did.
No, that's very true. So what I want to do, we'll go around the room, say what, you know, scared us as kids and got us interested in it. And then, you know, after that, we got some time to talk about, you know, how we furthered our interest in it as we got older. So I'll go first. So there were two things that kind of really terrified me and influenced me as a child a little bit. The first being, so my cousin is a couple years older than me, and it was always that kind of thing of when you're hanging out with your cousin, like the older relative that's like, well, I'm the older one, so we're going to do everything I want to do.
Of course.
And yeah, and like you said, it was the ballpark of, you know, oh, my parents let me watch these scary stuff all the time. And that was my cousin. And he had forced me basically to sit and watch the 1990s It miniseries with him. And I had to be, I don't know, maybe six years old. And that shit terrified me as a child. Like the scene with where they're going through like the little photo album and like Georgie's pictures in there and like it winks, like terrified me as a child.
Of course, yeah.
I remember watching that series as a kid, and I only saw a piece of my mom was channel surfing, and that came on, and she was watching it, and all I ever saw was the scene with the head in the refrigerator, and that was like literally it, and that traumatized me. That, but I think that's like my like, that's the beginning of it for me there, because I was fascinated by it but terrified of it.
Yeah, and so like after that, the other thing that always terrified me as a kid was, which we all are aware of it, but are you afraid of the dark?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, we can't have this conversation without it. You know, it was, I think everyone, you know, around our age group watched it because it was like, it was incredibly accessible, being that it was a like made for TV movie. So I think in it Canada. Fuck you. I think everyone kind of had a similar experience with it. You know, even people who aren't, you know, huge horror nerds like us. So I definitely remember being afraid of it. And my bus stop growing up was at a, like, it was at on the corner where it also had, like, a storm gutter.
Oh, yeah, like a storm drain, just like, okay, yep.
Yep, so that was always kind of a point of discussion with me and my asshole friends, like, oh, you know, Pennywise is down there. And, you know, I was, yeah, I was terrified for sure. But you truly can't have this conversation moving forward. You can't have this conversation without Are You Afraid of the Dark? I really think that is kind of like the critical central point of where horror really started to interest a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to that show too. Cause I remember reading about it, and like a lot of those early episodes were based on like folk tales. So it was also educational, but then they were introducing you to classic horror tropes that you would see like recreated later on as an adult, like the Monkey's Paw story and stuff like that.
Oh, of course. And what's funny is that the conversation with Are You Afraid of the Dark is always kind of held in tandem with Goosebumps, because the series, the television series Goosebumps, it really aired between 95 and 98, and Are You Afraid of the Dark started back in 1990 and went all the way through 96, right? So even though they're kind of held in the same conversation, they barely overlapped. Now, Goosebumps had been writing, you know, R.L. Stine had been writing books, you know, I think into the very late 80s to the early 90s. There was like an original 62 book series that all the shows were based off of. But I, you know, funny enough, I looked at Are You Afraid of the Dark? And some of it still to this day kind of holds up in like its imagery. I find some of the imagery scary, and I don't necessarily find that true for a lot of the Goosebumps. So it was a little, I think it was a little more, I don't know, kid-friendly Goosebumps was, whereas Are You Afraid of the Dark really did kind of try to push the envelope a little bit. That's not to say the stories aren't garbage, because they are, right? It's the same reason we watched Power Rangers. There's a reason that we were able to watch Power Rangers, because we're all fucking stupid, you know? Because if you watch an episode of the original Power Rangers, it's unwatchable.
But, yeah.
But, so the stories, while they weren't always good, the horror was not bad in Are You Afraid of the Dark.
All right, so to stop you there, can each of us name like a story from Are You Afraid of the Dark that we still remember because of how terrifying it was? I have one.
I have one too.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I have the two that ring to mind for me. The one that really freaked me out was the Riddle episode, where the two brothers in the woods, and they come across the house and they have to solve these riddles. And
yes.
A lot of that episode like escapes me, but I just remember they're in this taxi cab at the end. The cab driver is telling the story about how there's a really bad accident, and he's explaining to it. And the punchline is his entire head just twists around. He's like, yeah, and I kind of died. And it's just like this really intense scene for a Nickelodeon show.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
It's yeah. And then, you know, the other one was the episode that gave us Ryan Gosling. Because, you know, sexiest man alive.
Excuse me?
Which one was that?
There's
I knew he was in it because Canada, but
there was an episode where the whole thing was he was being haunted by the spirit of this like this girl, and he couldn't understand why he was being drawn to her. And then you kind of find out later that in a past life he dated her. They died in a car accident. So he's like a weird reincarnation who she's trying to bring back to the afterlife with her. But that's Ryan Gosling. That's his like debut on Are You Afraid of the Dark?
The Tale of Station 109.1.
Is that okay? Wow.
That's the episode, yeah. Season 5, episode 7. It looks like also the late Gilbert Gottfried was in that as well.
Yeah.
I do remember him in an episode. I didn't remember which. Wow. That is amazing. And see right there, that is pretty intense subject matter for a young audience. You know, the idea of like past lives.
If anyone's curious, these are streaming.
I found it incredibly difficult to find them. So where are they streaming?
Your favorite streaming service.
Oh my God. Does Paramount really have them?
Paramount Plus has Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Get the fuck out of here. All right. Well, I guess they're good for something then.
Yep. Sorry, Mike. Me and Jarvis have talked several times privately of just how Paramount Plus, basically their whole interface of how their app and website works is just absolute dog shit.
The app that I have that I never use.
Exactly. Yeah, yep. I feel the same way. But for any of our listeners, now you know. So if you missed the horror nostalgia of Are You Afraid of the Dark? Well, that is where you can find them.
I'm checking right now to see. They have 5 seasons on there.
I believe that's how many there are in total. So that's awesome.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep, while you're
Mike, your favorite was that's the first episode, The Tale of the Phantom Cab.
That's, yeah, I remember that being the first episode. Also, Paramount Plus wants to sponsor Horrible Friends. We're
happy. I'm amenable to it. I do want to meet Jeff Probst. That will be a condition. So, but while he's considering my proposition there, I'll come in with
yes.
The Tale of Badge. Now, I'm not sure if anyone will remember this one, but this one is striking to me. I say I talk about core memories a lot, and this one was one. And it's funny because I lived overseas for some time, and it just the memory of this episode popped into my head one day, and it took me months to find it because I couldn't remember the episode. It was difficult for me to describe what it was, but it basically, The Tale of Badge was about this boy and girl left at home and their grandma's watching them, and they find this like magical flute and they play it and enter another dimension where this rat Zamubafoob fucking monster man is following the around. It was practical makeup and it had the effect of like a dog man, and for some reason I found it terrifying. And I eventually, when I kind of, you know, typed in the right, you know, the correct buzzwords in the search engine, I found the image and I realized there was a reason that I was terrified. It is still scary. If you're near a computer right now, look up The Tale of Badge on Are You Afraid of the Dark? And the antagonist of that episode, I submit, is still a scary image.
Yeah, that's not an episode I'm familiar with. I want to go and check that one out, though.
Funny thing is, the one that sits with me came out the same season as this one, Jarvis. So there's actually, oh God.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
I know. It's fucking weird.
The fuck are you? Okay, for the listeners at home, yes, just Google Are You Afraid of the Dark, The Tale of Badge, and you'll know what we're talking about. Holy shit.
Good fucking God. I just looked it up.
Yeah.
Terrifying. I can't stress enough that the story is absolute garbage, and the acting is somehow worse. But that guy scared me, and he still does to this day. So hats off to that actor and that makeup effects team, because bravo.
I'm sure there's a furry out there that... You know,
if that dude showed up to a convention, he'd be kicked out. I'm sorry. Not a chance. I'm not familiar with the community. I don't know how weird they want to get, but that guy, I think, would push the envelope.
Probably. So I'm going to cheat a little bit here, but there's actually two that really stick with me. One solely for the, you know, creature, the villain, if you will, of it. Because I don't remember much of the story. And that is The Tale of the Dead Man's Float.
Okay.
Just if give a quick Google search of that, you'll see why. It was essentially like these kids are terrified of like swimming in a pool because there's some kind of legend that this zombie ghost would like pull them under and drown them.
Yeah, it was like the YMCA. It was like the school pool. And it was the red, almost shredded lettuce flesh monster man.
Yeah.
That is out.
Yeah.
if you look it up, yeah, like your safe search will blur it. Like,
that's really intense for a Nickelodeon show. That's insane,
right? It's terrifying.
I was like, the fact that like parent groups approve that, like the color red alone is way too violent.
It's a striking image. There's a lot of those in this series.
So yeah, that one, like creature wise, that one sits with me and terrified me. But the one that I remember the story of, that it was just because, you know, most of these still ended with like, you know, it was still somewhat of a happy ending majority of the time. Like, you know, the kids conquered whatever the fear it was, whatever the creature was, and everything went on nice. But then part of the first season, there was the Tale of the Dark Music. Now, I don't know if either of you remember this one, but the gist of the story, as much as most of them, acting's bad, story's pretty garbage. But essentially what it is this kid moves into his like uncle's old house with his mom and his sister. And in his basement, he finds a radio, and playing it, it just opens this door in the basement. And there's just this bright light and basically like a skeleton demon behind it. And a demonic voice always telling him basically to feed me.
I remember this episode. Holy yes. shit.
What he eventually does is gets his, like, you know, like the bully, you know, the classic bully, which I think, if I remember, was basically depicted as like the neighborhood metalhead wearing like a knockoff like Metallica or Pantera,
of course,
tank top and, you know, tucked into his jeans with boots. And he just convinces the bully to come down and just has him sent off into this door and he's just murdered. And it's basically like this kid just gets a taste of power, because then you hear his sister upstairs like talking shit to him, basically saying how like, oh, you're in trouble because I basically ratted you out to mom. And he just gets this like sinister smile of like, I'm going to feed my sister to this demon. And that's how it ends. Like, it just ends like that. Like, he's just going to just feed this demon anyone he can find.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost show-esque. Very Stephen King-esque story.
Yeah.
I think that's really fun. I think we would be doing a disservice to sit around and speak only of Are You Afraid of the Dark, but there is certainly a reason why it's kind of so much of a centerpiece to the topic of conversation. With that being said, there was a lot of different cartoons that kind of had similar, maybe not as intense, but certainly kind of like revolved around, you know, horror themes. We have Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Yes.
Right. So Cartoon Network got in. That ran from 99 to 02. Not very long, but it definitely left an impact. Before that, Nickelodeon had Ah Real Monsters.
Mm-hmm.
The WB had Gargoyles. So even if it wasn't something that was necessarily trying to scare us, you know, like Gargoyles was kind of like that, you know, group of superheroes kind of theme that, you know, a lot of these big name production companies were trying to go off, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the various superhero teams. So, but Gargoyles, I mean, that was kind of dark subject matter too.
And there's one you forgot.
Which one is that?
Tales from the Crypt.
I was getting there, and I'm glad you brought that up. Now, that started all the way from 89 to 96, is when that actually had its heyday. It stopped production after 96, but I mean, who can forget that intro? Now, that is also, by the way, kind of where my mom drew the line. You know, kind of similar to like when she found out my dad had showed me It, and she was pretty fucking pissed off. So Tales from the Crypt was off limits, but it came on around the time, if memory serves, right around the time The Simpsons would air at night. So I definitely heard that intro more times than I can count, and I remember being absolutely terrified.
You want to talk about horror being everywhere. The Crypt Keeper, there was like a cardboard cutout of that thing in every video store, like across the country.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm looking at this. Apparently, just looking up Tales from the Crypt, and it shows like the cast. Brad Pitt is listed.
Get out.
Somewhere in Tales from the Crypt, Brad Pitt was there. Hold on. Where were you, Brad Pitt? And apparently, Robert Zemeckis directed some of this as well.
That I do believe.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I can see where a lot of people got, you know, early starts in these, because a lot of 90% of these all had different directors, right? So yeah. This was a pretty big opportunity, I would imagine.
Okay, found him. Brad Pitt, episode or season 4, episode 9 of Tales from the Crypt, King of the Road.
All right, well,
a life on the edge list. Hot rodder named Billy comes to town run by Sheriff Garrett. He immediately dates and romances his daughter with ulterior motives linked to Garrett's past, for which he was once a champion of the hot rodding. Will Garrett accept Billy's challenge to the death?
I would.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would.
I think it's so much fun to see, you know, just how far this spans, right? Because, like, the topic is kind of vague, because it's really, I mean, what, you know, what we saw in the 90s, early 2000s while we were growing up. So yeah. While this won't necessarily reflect on, you know, the entire audience that might listen to this, I think there's a stark difference to what we see today to, like, how it was when we were growing up. Because I don't really see as many examples in today's media.
Absolutely. I think a lot of it stems from, you know, in the 90s, it was for most Americans, it was a big, like, stagnant period of time. Like, we weren't being, like, as, like, exposed to violence as we were in the 2000s and on, where, you know, the news was very slow. There maybe had a few incidents here and there, but we were more open to intensity because we were kind of bored in the 90s.
It was
Once you hit 2001, you know, 9/11 happens, and then the war is on. Everything kind of tones down a little bit television wise. I remember, like, a lot of things got censored voluntarily because they didn't want to associate with war and death.
Sure. Yeah, I you can definitely see kind of how, as, you know, time went on, networks wanted to play it safe, right? They wanted to reach wider audiences and be more amenable to both the parents and the kids, and get that, have, be in that agreeable place that, you know, parents would let their kids watch. So I feel like in the 90s and early 2000s, we were able to kind of push the envelope a little bit more. And maybe that's why we're as fucked up as we are. And I am very appreciative of that. Because, you know, it wasn't just cartoons. It was, you know, we have the Are You Afraid of the Dark, which kind of led into the interest of, like, the bigger stories that really pushed the envelope, like Tales from the Crypt. I remember Nickelodeon even did a, like, horror reality show. Do you guys remember this?
No.
What are you talking about?
Nickelodeon, get this, did a horror reality show. Look up, like, Scaredy Camp from 2002.
Oh, the name rings a bell.
Kind of like a Ghost Hunters kind of thing.
That's exactly what it was like. Wow. They had these kids, and it was like a full season long, where a group of kids had to work together to solve the mystery of what happened at this camp to this little boy. And it was very interesting. And the story, by the way, without giving it away, was very dark. But
this is,
it was
post Blair Witch, isn't it?
This was 02.
Yeah, so definitely, yeah.
Yes. And it was fun because they really kind of fucked these kids up, man. Like, I remember being, I did not enjoy watching it because it got to me. But they would put these kids, like, in boxes in the middle of the woods, and they would, like, give them a signal for when they could start. And they were literally, and I'm sure there was a camera crew around them, but to the audience, they were alone with a camera on them. It was kind of that, it was like the original kind of first person view camera rig that they had set up on them. I'd never seen anything like it. But again, this is back, you know, early 2000s when they were really pushing the envelope, and scary was in.
That's so wild.
Another bit of trivia for Scaredy Camp. The host, Emma Wilson, she was the daughter of Anne Robinson, who was the host of Weakest Link.
Get out.
The Miss Goodbye.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Insane.
So yeah, I have a few things that I was looking into. I have the big one I want to save for last, because I think we can talk about that forever. But the two shows that I remember as a kid, I'm wondering if you guys remember. Did you ever see a show called Erie, Indiana? It aired on Fox.
Indiana.
So this show is so bizarre. I remember it, like, in my peripherals as a kid. And I recently, like, went back to watch it because the whole series is on YouTube. It was this show about a kid who moves to this small town in Indiana called Erie, Indiana, where everything is weird. everything doesn't make any sense, and it was episodic, so every episode was a different case and a different story, but it was played up as if it was a children's version of Twin Peaks. It had that level of like bizarre to it. And
wow.
They would take like old 50s like sci-fi horror tropes and bring them to the 90s. So like one of the big stories, it's like the first episode is about he's suspicious that his neighbor, who his mom is friends with, he thinks that she's selling this Tupperware, this special Tupperware that she's also using to seal herself into to keep her young forever. And she's doing it to her kids. And like, that sounds ridiculous, but the way it's, the imagery and the way it's done is done in this very like David Lynch style. It's so out there.
How would you rate the production quality?
It's exceptional for a kid's kid's show. Like it's definitely up like top, probably like equal to Are You Afraid of the Dark or above. Just very well done, very interesting way of doing things. And like the main kid is I forget the actor's name, but he played Max Dennison in Hocus Pocus, and it's like it looks mm-hmm. like it's like got to be a year or two before he did that. But they go in some dark places. There's a lot of gunplay in this show, and they talk about like murdering kids. There's an episode where a kid dies. He gets hit by a car and like legit dies. And the whole episode is about the grief of this kid dying.
That's fucking dark.
Yeah. Okay. There's implications that a kid was turned into a dog and then eaten. They go into some crazy places. The final episode literally deals with the main character having to cope with the fact that he's been transported to the real world. He's on the set of that TV show and his co-stars are trying to shoot him and kill him. And this is on a kids network. This is on Fox Kids. Yeah.
I like my children's shows with guns. I'm a purist. I don't know why, but you know, funny enough, hearing you describe that, cause I didn't watch it. I do somewhat remember the name, but I feel like one can draw a line to how that kind of subject matter would interest them in, say, like the X-Files, right? It seems like a good jumping off point.
It's kind of like that too, I want to say, because the main characters do act like they're young Mulder and Scully type characters.
Which I don't know if you ever read the books of the what are they called? The something brothers? Hang on.
The Hardy Boys?
Hardy Boys. Thank you. Yeah, the Hardy Boys.
It's got that vibe too, yeah, for sure. The other show that I remember was a Disney Channel. This was like more like early 2000s. It was called So Weird. It aired around the same block as Even Stevens and those types of shows. And it was about this young girl traveling the country with her mom, who's a famous singer, and she's obsessed with conspiracy theories and the paranormal. And like every town they go into, they would encounter like a Sasquatch or an alien or a ghost. And it was her just like exploring these different tropes. And what I loved about it was every episode would begin with like a cold open that discussed the topic, like the real world associations with that topic. So you would have like this like base level of what like people actually think out there, or like actual cryptozoology.
Oh, wow. So you were getting kind of the lore.
Yeah.
Like the legitimate lore that was, you know, inspiring the show.
Yeah.
Or that episode.
And that's on Disney Plus. And I'm watching it, and it's a little bit hokey. It's got that Disney Channel like chic to it, but it's pretty decent. Yeah. But the final thing I wanted to talk about, the big one, I'm surprised that no one brought it up, is it's the book that like scared 1,000 children. You know, it's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Of course.
No. Yes. I always remember seeing the cover of it at the book fair every time and avoiding it like the plague.
Yeah. I never like owned that book, but I remember I'd always sneak into the library when we'd have like library day at my school, and I'd read like a chapter out of it. And I remember being like fascinated by those stories.
I always got them mixed up, because I did read that, but it was much later on. Like I wasn't a young kid when I eventually read Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. But I did read one of my favorite books that my mom would read to me is Where the Sidewalk Ends. And it was always it's kind of reminiscent. It's kind of like similar. It's, you know, poems and limericks that are, you know, a little outlandish, but not necessarily horror themed, that always kind of found its way into some scary territory. But yeah, no, I definitely remember Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. It's powerful as a kid for sure. And of course it was adapted into the recent movie.
Yeah.
Was that Guillermo del Toro who directed?
He produced.
He produced, yeah. Right. Okay. So
those books did not pull punches though. That the right. story of Harold the Scarecrow, like he skins a guy alive in that story. They really, it's crazy how hard they would push for those stories in the 90s.
Well, it's a shame that the movie did not push a little harder because I think it would have benefited.
I completely agree. I was not very happy with that movie.
I'm wondering if it's just kind of the era in general, but everything seemed very obscure. Like we said, they were a lot more willing to push the envelope. I have one last example that was one of the stranger examples of horror in early childhood media, at least when we were growing up. Do you guys remember Beetleborgs?
I do.
Big Bad Beetleborgs?
Big yes. Bad Beetleborgs.
Fuck yes.
Now, that was their theme was obviously to rival kind of the Power Rangers-centric TV that was, you know, so prevalent in the era. So that was obviously kind of during the era that it was, you know, everything on TV was kind of trying to rival the fame that Power Rangers was receiving in that, you know, childhood, the child demographic, right? Especially little boys, obviously. So the Beetleborgs conceptually is just so strange because it's kind of a similar theme where, like, you know, it's just these kids and they get powers and they have like cool suits of armor and whatever, and they get like these beetle vehicles. But what made it really strange is that they acquired these powers in a haunted house that contains a vampire, the werewolf, a mummy, and some guy who I can only describe as like a mixture of Casper, Elvis, and the Joker. And it is bizarre. I mean, truly obscure, but it was fun because like it was creepy. As a kid, it kind of like it, just like the 90s did with everything, like it would try to scare you a little bit, but it would make itself kind of endearing and silly. I don't know. It's definitely a positive, happy memory.
I remember that show too. I used to watch that all the time because that Saturday morning block was Power Rangers, and it was followed right by that. And I remember it was such a weird distinction because you would have these crazy Power Rangers style battles, but it was also segue into like an Abbott and Costello slapstick style horror comedy for the rest of the episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what it was like. And it was so fun.
All right, guys. Well, you know, talked about what terrified us as kids, but what we loved as kids growing up. But I just want to touch briefly on like what you kind of got into as you got older and what really kind of pushed you into the horror genre now. And I have a few things, but I'll list them pretty quickly. First was, I stumbled upon kind of like a crime horror thriller book series, probably maybe like midway through high school or so. Was just, I was at the store with my mom, and it was just like a book sitting in, you know, like the cheap book bin at the store. But it was just like the cover of it pulled me in. It was called The Death List. It's a white paperback book with just, you know, The Death List written in black and like, you know, just some numbers scratched in like blood red. And it was just essentially about this guy getting tormented by this terrifying serial killer and trying to link it all back to him. And like it went into like gruesome detail of how all these murders happened, and it went on to be like the author made like I think 4 books total like chronicling this story, and I loved it.
What was it that spoke to you about it? Like what really like
it was book? Honestly, it was just it really went in depth of like the visceral carnage that would happen, like basically people being disemboweled and like violently tortured. And it was just the amount of detail it went through that I could just picture it perfectly. And it was so unsettling.
That's yummy.
And then, yeah. And besides that, the only other 2 things that really got me into enjoying the horror genre. One, first, just really got me into watching the B to Z rated horror genre. And is essentially, as Jarvis will understand what this is called, that was what we called in high school around senior year, Bad Movie Monday.
We're going far back, ladies and gentlemen, but truth be told, that is what this very podcast was founded on.
Yes. Horrible Friends, as you all, anyone who's been listening for long enough, was birthed in you know, during the pandemic when none of us had anything to do, we're all locked inside, and our wonderful host Kyle had the idea, you know, hey, let's bring back what we used to do, but make a podcast out of it. And yeah, exactly what we did is after school on Mondays, maybe not all the time Mondays, because you know life, but majority of the time Mondays, we would pick one of our houses, either Jarvis's house, my house, Kyle's house, a couple other guys that watched it with us, and we would just throw in a random, just horrible horror movie. And it was a lot of fun. It was a great way to, like, you know, wrap up our senior year. A lot of bad movies. One of them I still want to do for the show at some point, a little ditty called Trailer Park of Terror.
Yep. Masterpiece.
Yeah. Masterpiece. As well as 2001 Maniacs, another masterpiece starring the great Robert Englund. And the last thing that really pulled me into actually enjoying, like, good horror movies was my fiance, my future wife, because Jackie is a huge fan of horror movies. And she would always tell me, you know, like, oh, let's watch this movie. And I would still, even though now I'm in my 30s, and at this point I was like, you know, my mid 20s, you know, let's watch one of these, you know, movies, like, you'll love it, like The Conjuring, Insidious. And I would always just be like, no, I don't feel like it. No, not right now. And eventually I finally just gave in and was like, okay, yeah, let's watch it. And I think the first one we did was the original, the first Insidious. And I was like, oh my God, this movie's amazing.
And, Jesus Christ, dude, I get it. Yeah, you want a blowjob? Yeah. I get it, man. I get it. Just, you'll listen, I promise. No, I'm just kidding. I will say, it is odd that you are like, I guess, adverse to watching a horror movie when you are one of the four co-hosts of a horror podcast. I just want to throw it out there. But
yeah, I think it was mostly because when we had the original idea for the podcast, my brain just thought of, like, oh yeah, just all those bad horror movies we used to watch. We'll just watch bad horror movies. Then when it was like, no, we're going to watch, like, actual scary horror movies as well, I was like, oh no. Oh no, I don't want to. And that's when, you know, she was finally able to convince me, like, no, you can enjoy these movies, you little baby.
You went from watching Friday the 13th to watching The Martyrs. So
big time. Yeah. Strong difference.
I don't want to remember that. But yeah, that's whatever you guys got. Whatever propelled you into the being a fan of the genre that you are now.
All right, I'll go next. I remember my love for cinema in general has always been the sense of community that comes out of certain films. Like, I love pop cinema for that sense, that, you know, the movies that bring people together. That's why I'm big on Star Wars and big on the MCU. And the thing that took note for me was, it seems like it was the same year. I don't know if they both came out the same year, these two movies, but the one was Freddy versus Jason, and the other one was the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. And those are two movies that I know a lot of people have opinions on. But at that time, when I was just getting into it, I was fascinated by the culture surrounding, like, Nightmare on Elm Street and Freddy versus Jason. And I remember people making a big deal about that crossover at the time. I mean, shit, HBO had a fucking weigh-in for Freddy and Jason. Robert Englund put
that's
on
right
to just get weighed. Yep. So it was a big deal. And I remember watching that movie feeling like I was a part of something bigger. And I love that idea that, you know, a horror story could create that, like, that sense of lore outside of itself. Yeah, and then
created the universe.
Yeah. And the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was one where I kind of got trolled by it, because I went in and I saw that that prologue and I legit thought that shit was real. I thought that was 100% a true story. And I forgave every flaw in that movie because I thought I was watching, like, a true crime story about, like,
now, are we talking about the 2003 remake with Jessica Biel?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That, I think, is critically underrated, truth be told.
I do think it's way better than a lot of people give it credit for. I think it's very effective in making you believe that this was a true story. You know, because I didn't have, like, as much easy access to the internet back then, so it wasn't easy to do a quick Google and find out that it was all made up. But, you know, just, like, that prologue sticks with me more than any other part of that movie, how authentic it feels. But the thing that really sealed the deal for me was like that the summer before I went to high school, my mom, God rest her soul, she gave me a box of Stephen King books, and she was like a huge horror fan. Like she loved it all. And she was big on Stephen King. And she told me about the Dark Tower series, which is as far away from horror as you can get, as far as Stephen King gets. But I remember reading over the summer before my freshman year, The Gunslinger. And I was so into it that by my senior year, I had read every single book in Stephen King's catalog. And by the time I got into college, I was just like full on into horror. You know,
that's a big undertaking.
Yeah. I mean, that's for those 4 years, my birthdays and my Christmases were like probably 5 or 10 Stephen King paperbacks for my parents. So I got everything. I went through, I read it in like 3 days, I think. I read Salem's Lot in like 2 weeks. I just love that shit. Those books are so incredible. You know, controversial opinion, but Stephen King is pretty fucking awesome.
Oh, I don't think you're going to hear any argument out of us.
No, absolutely not.
But wow, yeah, I think it would take me at minimum 3 weeks to get through it, even back in my heyday of reading. Yeah, I was never a speed reader.
Nah, me either. It would probably take me longer than 3 weeks to get through that, honestly.
I think if I'm going to close us out, you know, I've touched on it before in our regular Horrible Friends episodes with, you know, various movies. I always go back to, so my dad was a substitute teacher growing up for a good while until he received his teaching degree and became full time. So every summer he wouldn't work, even when he did go full time, he wouldn't work during the summer, obviously, because he was a teacher, and he would have to get a summer job. And he worked at Blockbuster. So I was very lucky in that even as a kid, I would get a lot of the best of the worst in horror. I'm talking Mosquitoes, which is a movie that we've covered. I'm talking like anything. If you are to place yourself back in Blockbuster Video on a Friday night and go through the horror aisle, I got to see the vast majority of all those movies because he was able to bring multiple back for free at, several at a time. So I spent many summers just watching really shitty C&D grade horror movies and just absolutely falling in love with them. It's truth be told, it really is some of my fondest memories of childhood. So I think just having that access and kind of having like that lack of, you know, adult supervision, because my mom was still very much at work during that time. I think that's really what propelled me to kind of having like the level of interest that I have in it today. So it's all thanks to Big Steve. Big Steve, shout out. Thanks for fucking.
Big Steve.
My man.
If you know Big Steve Fox.
Big Steve Fox. So yeah, I'd say that's where it all started, and that's really where it all will end.
You want to talk about another nostalgia, like think about going to the like Blockbuster, any rental store, and going down the horror aisle and the scariest VHS covers, like just the wall of it. Because I remember you guys talking on the Jack Frost episode about the Jack Frost VHS cover or like the Halloween covers. That stuff used to scare the shit out of me before I even saw the movies.
Yep, me too.
No, lives rent free in my head. I'll never forget kind of that moving image of just seeing all those, the beautiful cover work of all those, you know, horror VHSs. And those were better times. You know, it's kind of a cliche to say, but like truth, I truly feel those were better times.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming by and having this little talk with me. It's a lot of fun. Brought up a lot of, you know, childhood trauma, you know, really like that. Big fan of that. As always, feel free to check out our podcast on all the different social medias. I'd like to thank Connor McLeod and Andrew Cavanaugh for, you know, the artwork, the music, and a future shout out to me for editing this. You're doing great, bud. And to close us out, Mike John, what would you say to all those kids hiding under the blanket watching the scary movies at night?
Thanks for stopping by for a hot cup of spoop. I'm just